The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to your cordless, everybody. It's 11:02 p.m. on the east coast of the U.S., 8:02 on the west coast, 2:02 in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 2 minutes after 10 p.m. at night, where I'm sitting here smack dab in Ilhan Omar's congressional district here in northeast Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. I think numbers are 56, I think, if I'm right. Yeah, we got a big show. We got a big week. What am I talking about? Yeah, okay. All right, hope you had a nice weekend and stuff like that, you know. So it's December. Welcome to December. We actually got some snow here over the last hour, which is surprising. I just happened to look out the window to the parking lot of our building, and there's snow coming in the cars. I was really surprised. I did not know that. That I did not know. So what's going on here? Tonight, UFOs. Yeah. Pretty much all evening, because I'm making up for not talking about it for weeks, because there wasn't much going on, and all of a sudden there's oodles going on. So we're going to talk about that. I got a couple other notes about a couple other things. Tomorrow night, our guest, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, the columnist at redstate.com. She was a regular on my previous radio shows and podcasts, and she's going to be a regular here too. I'm glad to invite her back into the fold once again. She's going to be our guest tomorrow, Wednesday. Debate night special, the fourth and possibly the last. It's the last one scheduled anyway. I'm just reading this afternoon. The RNC is now thinking about maybe scheduling more. Also, there's a couple of television networks that might do them anyway and invite the candidates even if the RNC doesn't schedule them. But anyway, it's the last official of the four Republican primary debates. The rumor is that Trump is going to show up for this one. That's the rumor, but it has not been confirmed yet. The reason that's been rumored is because the Secret Service has been casing out the venue, and he's the only person with Secret Service protection right now. That's the reason. So that's like I said, nothing for sure. Anyway, that's taking place in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. As a matter of fact, it'll be interesting. We're going to talk to Jennifer Oliver O'Connell tomorrow night. She's thinking about going to this. So it'll be really interesting to talk to her after that, if that happens. At Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is in the Central Time Zone, it's starting at 7 p.m. Central. It's scheduled to end at 9 p.m. Central, at which case, as we did with the previous three debates, we will go live with our panel ASAP. So what that comes down to is we'll be starting an hour early on Wednesday. Instead of 11 p.m. Central or Eastern, we're going to start... Let me get that straight. Instead of 11 p.m. Eastern, we're going to start at 10 p.m. Eastern. And we have the same three panels we've had the last three times. We've got Jeffrey Meyer, the CEO and publisher of Conk News. We got Tim Conaway, presidential candidate himself under the No Party. Not no label, it's just no. And Don Zorro, the intelligence operative who goes around, as far as we know, his job is killing people. So he can't talk about it. That's the panel. So anyway, so we're looking forward to that. I'm taking Thursday off. I'm going to go see my mother. You know, she's 99 years old, and it's a little bit of a drive, and I'm going to spend the night with her. And so, and she's in better shape than I am, as I joked about in the description for tonight's show. And so that's what we got going on here. Also, one more thing. Christmas week. Okay, we're taking the week of Christmas. That would be the 25th through 28th. Monday through Thursday, 25th being Christmas Day, we're taking that week off. However, we're going to do a show on January 1st, New Year's Day. I know, you're thinking, Jim, you're so lazy. What are you doing? Yeah, no, I'm going to try this. We're going to do it. on January 1st. So we're going to do a show on New Year's Day night, of course, you know, when all of you are still in a drunken stupor from the night before. And I'm going to see how many of you tune in. I'm kind of curious, you know. Okay, so there's one thing. You know, you're hungover. I might as well watch Jim Peters on the tube, or I'm hungover. Why should I watch Jim Peters on the tube? You know, so whatever. So we'll find out. So, yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do that show on Monday, New Year's Day. So we're going to start the week and the month on the first of the year. It'll be interesting. Okay, so what do we got tonight? Let me tell you. I'm telling you. Okay, I got a couple things I want to get out of the way here before we actually get onto the UFO shit. A couple things. First of all, today, 240 years ago today, December 4th, 1783, George Washington gathered his officers from the Continental Army at Francis Tavern in New York City to tell them he was stepping down as commander-in-chief. It was apparently a very emotional meeting. And the really interesting thing about this is that this building, this bar was a tavern, is at 54 Pearl Street in Manhattan. It's still standing. It's supposedly the oldest building in New York City that still exists. Supposedly it was built in 1719 as a house. Yeah, this is really, really old stuff. And this meeting was 240 years ago today. And the accounts of it was that it was quite emotional. He had 30 of his highest officers there, and he basically hugged every one of them. They stood in line, and he hugged them. Now, he had no idea at that time that he was going to be president. What, 8 years later? Oh, let me see if I can do some math here. Yeah, no, 9 years later, he became president. And he thought he was going to retire, go back to the farm, literally, Mount Vernon, and be a farmer, which was what he was. That's what he thought. And he was called back into service. And, you know, it's really interesting. If you read about his two terms, first of all, he wasn't really elected in the standard sense. He was, because he was the first president, and it was the start of the new Constitution, it says in the Constitution, the first president shall be chosen by Congress. And he was. So he didn't actually run for election. It was unanimous. He was picked unanimously. So, and he was there for two terms, at that time, there's no term limit in the Constitution of the president. That was added after Franklin Delano Roosevelt got elected four times. And as soon as he died, they decided, we don't want to deal with this crap. But again, and is it the 28th Amendment, I think, that limits the president to two terms? I can't remember. But anyway, at that time, it wasn't. At that time, he said, two's enough. But what's kind of lost to history, I mean, not really, but most people aren't aware of this, but that is, although he started out his presidency on a really, really good footing, I mean, he was, you know, revered by the whole country, by the end of his second term, Congress hated his guts. And you can look this up and read about this. It was not, toward the end, it was not going well. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know if it was just that. I mean, our representative democracy is set up literally for argument. You know, that's the deal. We're supposed to come to compromise. And the problem right now is, if you want to call it that, is that apparently the two parties are so far apart on so many things. But, you know, up until recently, it's worked pretty well. It's like Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan would argue tooth and nail in the White House, in the Oval Office, and then go out and have drinks. You know, that was they were actually great friends, but they were standing up for their positions, and that is the way this representative democracy is supposed to work. And sometimes people get pissed off, and you deal with that long enough, you know. Well, and so Washington was pretty much ready to go home after the second term, you know. However, it did surprise people because he had the opportunity for virtually unlimited run. He probably could have stayed for 30 years, you know, because the public loved him so much. And he said no. He set a precedent that was basically only broken once, And after it was broken, there was another amendment to make certain it never happened again. So, although there were quite a few, but not quite a few, what, a handful of presidents that did try to run for third terms but never succeeded. The most notable, I think, is probably, or and most recent, too, is probably Teddy Roosevelt, you know, who did two terms, left, and decided he was so pissed off about what was going on when he was gone that he tried to come back. Didn't work. He gave a very famous speech on his third campaign run. I think it's 1905, if I'm right, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I'm not kidding. I don't know if you know about this. He literally got shot. Somebody in the crowd shot him. It was an assassination attempt. And not only did he fail, he suffered a wound. He finished his speech. It's fucking pretty much amazing. He finished his speech and then went to the hospital. It's like, Christ, okay. You know, they're talking about this guy being tough, you know. Anyway, that happened 240 years ago today. Now, what happened yesterday, 31 years ago yesterday, the first text message was sent ever by a guy named Neil Papworth, working in, this is in England. He was a 22-year-old engineer from Reading, and he was working for Vodafone. Or, no, I'm sorry, he was working for a company that was doing coding for Vodafone, and Vodafone asked his company, the company he worked for, to come up with a service. This is 1992. So now you have to understand something. So he sends this text message. There, phone handsets existed. They were enormous. You know, I use a thing on this program. It's in the intro, and I talk, it's kind of a catchphrase I use. Coming to you cordless. I don't know if you guys remember. That's actually from a very famous movie called, and not God, I might forget the name of the movie. What is it called? From 1986. It's called, oh, Jesus. Now I can't remember. And also, it turns out that I and everybody remembers the quote incorrectly. I actually did look on YouTube and look at the scene. Everyone seems to think that the character said he's on a giant brick cell phone. Just enormous. And everyone seems to think he said, coming to your cordless. He actually said, talking to your cordless. That's actually what he said. I misremembered it too. I go with coming to your cordless because I think it sounds better. The alliteration sounds better. But it's actually, that's not a quote. That's a misquote. So in this movie, what is the name of the movie? God damn it. I can't remember. This guy, he gets a call from his friend, the main character, and he's on this giant cell phone. And that's what they were in 1986. That's what you got, you know? So, and what you don't know is that there was no way to put characters into the phone, you know, alphabet characters at that time. It was just numbers. And they had these stupid little analog, these were analog cell phones. They were not digital cell phones. I had one, not one of those giant ones, but I had one of the last of the analog cell phones, which I got in the early 90s, I think it was. So a few years after that, they were smaller by then, but they were still analog. So they did not have a display. Other, you know, there was kind of an LCD display with goofy characters, you know, that sort of thing. There's no way to type a message. So this Papworth guy, he typed a message to test the system on his computer and sent it to this handset of Richard Jarvis, who was a director of communications at Vodafone, and he was at a Christmas party, and the very first message is Merry Christmas. That was it, and it worked. Jarvis got it, and now what I think, there's like a billion of those messages sent every 6 hours or something like that. I don't, who knows, you know? I don't know what it is with me. I get a little verklempt when I talk about history, about people doing stuff for the first time, because Did Papworth knew he was making history? Probably not. He didn't. There's another thing like that too. You know, you go back all back to the whole thing. I mean, there's the first video ever uploaded to YouTube, which is still there, by one of the founders. Like 30 seconds long. He's at the zoo or something like that. You know, and that's going to be really interesting too, because Google Alphabet, that owns Google, has announced now that for the first time ever, I was talking about this last week, they're going to start purging data from their system. Old emails and Gmail, old videos, on YouTube, old photos and Google photos, they're going to start kind of deleting some of them. And yeah, because the thing, you can't save that shit forever. I mean, you just can't. Now, I was telling you last week about it. This goes kind of falls into our topic of discussion tonight. Quantum memory, which they think they're going to be able to commercialize in about 5 years. And quantum memory will let us save everything forever. You'll be able to get, they are saying you can get all the data on the entire planet in something the size of a sugar cube. Basically, you'd be able to put all the data on the planet in a thumb drive. So, I mean, once that happens, oh, hell, no one's going to care. So at that point, there's literally no cost. I don't understand, you know, if I'm right, there's 300 minutes of video uploaded to YouTube. Is it every minute or every second? I can't remember. It's just a ridiculous amount. I'm sure they have a whole, they have whole teams of people at these data centers whose only job is to just install solid state hard drives constantly every day, you know? So, you know, and so they're buying them bulk, and what are they paying for them? A 1 terabyte hard drive, they're probably paying, you know, $80, 50 maybe, I don't know, when you buy them, you know, that bulk. But seriously, I mean, when does it stop? It's interesting. Well, anyway, that was 31 years ago today, or yesterday, excuse me, 31 years ago yesterday that he sent the first message, Merry Christmas. Want to touch on one more thing I talked about last week. I said that last Thursday we were talking about the fact that it appeared that George Santos would be expelled from the House of Representatives. He was, and I think this is a very good idea. This guy is a psychopath. He's crazy. He's totally crazy. Now, the counter argument is, well, he got elected to Congress by the people in his district, and he shouldn't be able to serve. And yeah. But the actual reason he ended up getting expelled is they did an ethics report on him, and it turns out he has been stealing money hand over fist from basically everybody and everything. I mean, this guy doesn't have an honest bone in his body, as far as I can tell. You know, and he's bitching and moaning about it. Oh, shut up. I mean, seriously, I don't care if he's a Republican. I don't care if he's conservative. I do not care. Get the fuck out of there. And say, we don't need this. We already got enough fucking boneheaded congressmen who aren't breaking the law, you know. We have a president who apparently is breaking the law, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow. It's not looking for President Biden. And of course, you know, I hate this phrase because they use it for Trump constantly for 4 years. The walls are closing in, and people are now using that for Biden too. You know, so I'm not going to say that because the thing is, they said it for 4 years, and it wasn't true. Although, if I can go on a little tangent here, and this started this weekend in real earnest, and that is, the Democrats are now completely praying doom and gloom about the presidential, Donald Trump presidency. You know, that he's gonna arrest people, you know, the democracy is going to fall apart, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, you do realize he was president once already, right? and some guy writes on, I know, Washington Post, he says, no, this time it's going to be way worse. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, you tell me about that. Yeah. I mean, all they're doing is fomenting fear. Now, the thing is, all these outlets, these liberal outlets, the reason they're doing that, there's a business reason, and that is most of them, all of them, except for Fox News, all of them have lost tremendous ratings and subscriptions, all of them. So now they're appealing to their base, and their base is leftist lunatics who buy all this stuff, and so that's they're throwing red meat at their audience is what they're doing. But it's getting just ridiculous. So, and that brings me to another thing I saw tonight too. I'm watching CBS News, okay, boomer, you know, that's me. You know, I'm 68 years old. I'm watching the fucking CBS News Evening News. The Nora O'Donnell, she has on a fabulous navy blue suit on and boots. Just looks terrific, fantastic. God, what do you think I watch? Because I'm an old perv, that's why. And generally, here's what one of the stories they're talking about. They're talking about what they called voter suppression. And now this is in Georgia. So first of all, she announces the report, the package, as they call it. She announces it by saying that that there's people in Georgia who falsely claim that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. Okay, first of all, how do you know that's false? Now, you can say that, well, the election was certified for Joe Biden. That's a fact. We know that. He was certified as winning the presidential election. Great. That's terrific. That doesn't mean it wasn't faked. That doesn't mean that no bullshit happened. I mean, I've gone down the list before. 2004, supposedly the Republicans cheated those two presidential elections. I've read reports that Kerry knew they cheated, and he let it go because, you know, at that time, because, you know, Trump is not going to let shit like that go. that's his personality, isn't. You know, 1960, Nixon got screwed. Kennedy's father, rigged the election in Cook County in Illinois, and that election was so close that changing that one county changed the electoral count for the whole thing. And the other thing is, and this is what I thought about this too. And also, I know I have to point this out before I go to the point I was going to make. You know, if you've listened to the show at all, you know I'm one of these election deniers. I have evidence. My evidence is the size of the crowds that Joe Biden drew during the election campaign. You're going to tell me this guy, with one exception, never drew more than 200 people at every campaign event. As a matter of fact, I'm actually being generous. It was probably no more than 100 people. He drew so few people that the press couldn't come up with accurate counts. And you're thinking, well, there's so many people there, it'd be easy to count. But no, at that point, you have as many press and as many staffers for the campaign in this space as people, and you literally can't tell who the people are that showed up and who are there by obligation. You can't tell. That's how few. Exception, 5 days before the election in Pennsylvania, I don't know what city, I can't remember, he drew 900 people. That's it. That's the one exception. Otherwise, he never drew more than 200 people. And what are we talking about? Are we talking about like 100 campaign events? In the meantime, Trump drew an average of 20,000 every single one. Okay, so now my friends, my liberal friends, and you know, and even Tim Conaway, God bless his heart, you know, he's argued with me. He still thinks I'm crazy. That's fine, you know. And because he says, well, you got to understand, nobody voted for Biden. Everybody voted against Trump. And yeah, I can get that. But everybody? Everybody, like 95% of the people who voted for Biden voted against Trump, 95%. And then on top of that, he gets 81 million votes. He gets more votes than Barack Obama did, who's the acknowledged Frank Sinatra of American politics. I mean, you know, seriously, the man oozes charisma. And he's basically the JFK of his generation, except he didn't have a lot of talent. But I'm talking about Obama. You know, he didn't have a lot of talent for the job, but man, charisma, just out the pores. I mean, he's oozing it. And you're going to tell me that nobody showed up to see Biden and yet he got 81 million votes. Now, I think that's suspicious. I think that Trump thought that was suspicious too. Problem, real problem. And this is the part where you got to lay the blame on the Trump campaign. You do. And that is, well, the election was what, November 5th? You've basically got to the first of the year. You have roughly 8 weeks to prove your point. Because the certification ceremony is always held around the 15th, around the third week of January, right? So you have about 8 weeks to prove this. And they couldn't get their shit together. That's the thing. Rudy Giuliani was going on. He says, and apparently this is still true. They have affidavits from 600 people saying they saw cheating. Apparently they did. And then Sidney Powell, what the hell happened there? This woman, she had an impeccable reputation. I mean, with everybody. And she apparently, I don't know, and I don't know if she was just so taken aback by fraud that she saw or if she just dishonest. She went off the deep end. It's like, I don't know what happened there. I mean, you know, now she has turned state's evidence in one of the trials for Trump. I mean, this is crazy. She kept talking about, well, we're gonna release the Kraken for soon, all this sort of shit. She didn't have anything. I don't understand. Giuliani apparently actually did have something, but they couldn't get their shit together to put their ducks in all in a row. See, I mean, at some point, I mean, this is a common theme of not only politics, but between life. There's a statute of limitations on everything. I mean, it may not be real, it may not be legal, but at some point, you're out of time. You just have to, you know, you have to come to terms with that. You know, you have roughly 8 weeks to prove that your election was frauded, because there's no mechanism in the Constitution. There's no mechanism to dispute it. There isn't. So then you end up with what happened in 2000, which is a really interesting thing, because if you know anything about this or read about it, supposedly the Republicans cheated, but they kind of didn't have to. because okay, so ostensibly, Gore won the 2000, or lost the 2000 election by what, 532 votes in Florida, supposedly. Supposedly. I think it's 2 years later, the Miami Herald decided to do, they did a statewide recount. Now, you got to get this straight here. What Gore was asking from the Supreme Court is a recount of like two or three counties. I think it was Dade, Broward, and one other one. Was it Palm Beach? I can't remember. The election laws in Florida said you can do a recount of the entire state, but there was no mechanism to do one for individual counties. And that's actually why the Supreme Court ruled against him. You know, it's still a real contentious ruling, because they didn't want to be put in that position. They knew they were basically deciding the election. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. I understand. I don't blame them. But that was actually legally the ruling that they used, if I'm correct, that you could, you know. And so Gore, give him the chance for a statewide recount. You could say, well, okay, let's roll the dice. What the fuck? We've already lost, you know. He didn't do it. According to the Miami Herald, if he had done a statewide recount, he would have won by 20,000 votes. That's what the Miami Herald said a couple of years later. I don't know exactly how they figured that out. I know it was partly polling, partly counting votes that already existed. I actually don't know. I never looked into that. But I do know that they wrote this article and said that in reality, Gore won the state of Florida by 20,000 votes, which would have made him president, which means he's the stupidest fucking jackass on earth. And he is. And if I hear any more of this shit about this climate change bullshit that he started, I'm going to, like, blow a gasket. You know, they're doing this summit over in Saudi Arabia, in Dubai, this climate change summit, and it's fucking ridiculous. I mean, you know, America, the United States, we're giving away the store to solve a problem that's not real. It's just, and, you know, Kerry gets up there and he's so fervent and he's so emotional and he's so stupid. And then you get the 2004 election. You have the worst speaker in Washington, D.C., George W. Bush, against the second worst speaker in Washington, D.C., John Kerry. It's like king of the idiots. What the hell? You know, oh, I'm so glad that Kerry didn't become president. I mean, I am not a fan of George W. Bush. I still am not. I know there are people who worked with him and say, no, he's really not that stupid at all. He's quite smart. I don't buy it. I don't believe it. So, any rate, yeah, so I got to get back to the CBS News story. There's a big circle. So Nora says, yeah, so she says that these people are falsely claiming, she has no evidence that it's false. She doesn't. You know, the only real fact is you can say Joe Biden was certified as president. That's a fact, you know. Whether it was false or not, whether that was real or not, I have no idea. But here's the problem. There's certain people, and of course they point out they're all Republicans. In Georgia, there's certain citizens who've taken it upon themselves to go through rolls of thousands of voter rolls to find people who are illegally listed. Now, and the example they used, and of course they did, a black man who was homeless at the time of the election, but was working at a barbershop, and he listed the barbershop as his residence. And that's, excuse me, under Georgia law, I think maybe pretty much everywhere, but under Georgia law, that's illegal. You can't use a commercial address for your voting registration. And he did, and they caught him, you know. And so, and you know, everyone's saying, well, you know, that's voter suppression, it's because he's black. No, it's against the law. And not only that, it was really, he's not homeless anymore. It was very simple for him to fix. He fixed it, you know. And then they're also bringing up in the story, they're saying, well, you know, what we've learned from all these people doing this is that the vast majority of these problems are either administrative or clerical errors. Well, don't you want that pointed out? I mean, seriously, is that bad? I'm like pulling my hair out. They've tried to make this into some deep, dark conspiracy. Well, no, your voter rolls are wrong. You know, if anything, these people are doing the work for you, and it appears your voter registration staff is incompetent. You're listing people that shouldn't be listed. Yeah, well, you know, and this guy that they interviewed, and he said, well, you know, I think it's because I'm black and blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. You know, it was a very simple thing for him to change it. He was breaking the law. You know, does it matter whether he's black? No, it doesn't. He's breaking the law. And now he doesn't have to break the law. Now he can vote. Oh, wow. Well, he was suppressed. Bullshit. He was not. This is crap. You know, this is liberal democratic crap. It's like they want every single person in the country to vote. The people who came off the boat. I mean, I said since it started now 3 years ago that the reason they're leading all these people into the southern borders because sooner or later they were going to be able to give some or all of them the right to vote. And they will all vote. The vast majority of them will vote Democratic because of the reciprocal nature of the human personality. They help me, so I'm going to help them. You know. Now, I've actually started to wonder about that, and I brought that up last week, I think it was, too. I'm seeing stuff now that there's so much incompetence in the Biden administration. I'm actually starting to doubt my theory there, because I've always thought nobody could be that incompetent. Nobody could. And now I'm starting to wonder if maybe that's true. It's sheer utter incompetence. Because these people are so incompetent, it's mind-boggling. They cannot do any. You know, here's the thing. I don't like their policies, but they can't even do their policies either. They can't do anything. They can't get anything done. Anyway, I had to go off on this thing about the CBS News story because it was just complete, utter trash. You know, oh, wow, there's people voting who shouldn't be voting. Oh, that's voter suppression. No, it isn't. That's people breaking the law. And the thing is, and if they're clerical or errors, that's your staff fucking up. You know, if people can't vote because your staff fucked up, well, geez, maybe we need to point that out, too. You know? Oh, man. This gets me going. Anyway, so I put in the description of the show tonight, and this is true, I have not talked about the UFO stuff for a couple, 2, 3, 4 weeks now. I don't know. It's been a while. Maybe I've mentioned a little tangentially. Because nothing's happened recently, but in the last couple weeks, a whole bunch of stuff's happened. So I thought today, especially with Jennifer coming on tomorrow, we'll have a short monologue. I thought I would spend a little time talking about what's going on in the UFO world. And here's the big one. This is from the Daily Mail in the UK. And this is the amazing thing. And I don't understand why this is true, but the Daily Mail seems to break a lot of American political stories. They're really good at covering American politics and basically American news in general. They seem to be way better than a lot of our own news organizations, and I don't know why that is. So I have a tendency to put, and this is historic, this is going back several years now, I have a tendency to put faith in this because they're reporting it, and they're reporting it as an exclusive. And the headline on their website was, CIA's secret office has conducted UFO retrieval missions on at least 9 crash sites around the world, whistleblowers reveal. So, I did not know this. There is an office of the CIA, there's a division of the CIA called the Office of Global Access. And apparently, they're the office that actually deals with extraterrestrial spacecraft and UFOs for the CIA. Just like the ARCO, or the RO thing, the All Domain Anonymous Recovery Office deals, that's the public one that deals for the Pentagon. This is for the CIA, which of course is not in the Pentagon. So yeah, it's called the OGA for short, and they have interviewed whistleblowers at the Daily Mail who say, and they've all come said the same story, that the CIA has procured 9 alien spacecraft. 7 crashed, 7 that crashed, and 2 that for some reason they don't explain it, for some reason are intact. Now, if you've listened to this show at all, you know that I've been saying for years, I've been saying that the only thing I know about the UFOs that I'm certain of, and because of government documents, is that we have retrieved at least 6 and possibly 9 or more extraterrestrial spacecraft. I've always said that, and that's the exact numbers I've used. And the number 9, the reason I mentioned the number 9 is because it seems to have come up a lot. Robert Lazar said he was that in the hangar he was working, there were 9 crashed spacecraft. Actually, he also said some of them were damaged. He said that. And he said some of them were extremely damaged. So it's very interesting. That in that sense, that's the story flies with him. So, and apparently this office was set up in 2003 of the CIA. I'm just going to read a sentence from here from this report, or the report from the Daily Mail. Though the shocking claims sound like they come from a science fiction novel, they are part of a growing body of evidence suggesting the U.S. government could indeed be hiding advanced vehicles that were not made by humans. And yeah, there's a lot of, I don't know if you call it evidence, it's called secondhand hearsay by a lot of people who say they're in the know, by people who have government security clearances and can't go on the record because it can't violate the security oaths. And by the way, if you're curious, people take these security oaths very seriously, partly because if you do violate them, yeah, you can actually be sentenced to death. I mean, and so people don't, you know, you don't want to, the people in the government know not to mess with the government. They know that. So you, or at the very least, you can be put away for treason for 50 years. And so people are very, 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 they're very conscious of this. Guys like Louis Alexandro, and this is also from across the pond, Nick Pope, who's probably the premier guy in Britain. He worked for the Ministry of Defense in their UFO office. They have to measure what they say very carefully, because all of these guys actually know more than they can talk about. You know, and even Nick Pope's alluded to that too. And there's another story here. And because he's talking about the very same thing I've been talking about for a while too. I'll read you the headline from this. This is from the Daily Star, not the Daily Mail. UK's top UFO expert claims secret power struggle being fought to expose alien life. And he's talking about the secret power struggle in the Pentagon. So Pope looks at this two different ways, and that is, one is that there's a faction that wants to get the story out and is fighting the faction that doesn't. And then there's another theory that they're floating this because they think it's true, and they want to see by putting it out there if they can shake the trees and actually come up with evidence. I mean, you know, I don't have to tell you this. These rumors have been floating around for years and years and years, but that's true. We don't have any actual bulletproof proof that the Pentagon has this stuff. So Pope's other theory is that they're throwing this against the wall to see how and if anybody reacts. And that's a really interesting thing. One moment. There's another way to look at this too. So the assumption's always been, I mean, I have said this, my speculation is that those TikTok things that have been flying around the Navy vessels for the last 15 years, I think that some, probably the majority and possibly all of them are actually ours and not extraterrestrial, but they're based on extraterrestrial technology. In other words, we have these crashed saucers. This is what Robert Lazar said he was hired to do, to reverse engineer them, try to figure out how the propulsion systems work, how to figure out how it works. There's two different theories on that. Now, there's a video on YouTube dated from 1992. It's in standard def, you know, just really bad, stupid standard def video, where to the camera, Lazar does basically a lecture on how what he discovered working on these spacecraft, and basically in how the propulsion systems work. So I'll tie this up in like 30 seconds. The way they work is they take the element 115, which in 1989 or 1992, when he did the tape, no longer did not exist. We did not have that here. It was discovered on Earth here in 2006, if I'm right. Now it's called muscovium. That's what element 115 is called. And of course, the numbers go on the chart, the periodic element chart. And as a general rule, and this is important to the discussion, as a general rule, the farther up the chart you go, the more unstable elements become. But it turns out element 115 is an exception to that, that it's a very stable element, whereas all the elements around it are not. So anyway, it uses what, literally, he said they can run the spacecraft for 10 years off a piece of element 115 about the size of a piece of chewing gum. That's what he said. So what happens is they bombard this with electrons, isotopes, and basically in a fission process, they turn it into element 116. No, I'm sorry, there'll be a fusion process. In a fusion process, in other words, they add electrons to it, right? They bombard it with electrons, they turn it into element 116, which also apparently is also stable. And then they take molecules from that, and they combine it with antimatter, which we basically can't do here on Earth. I mean, I think they've come up with a few molecules of atom of antimatter in the CERN collider and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, we've discovered it, but basically you can't come up with any a decent quantity of it. But it turns out, I mean, if you think atomic fusion or fission is powerful, this antimatter shit. So literally, okay, and this thing runs in a half dome about the size of a microwave oven, or I think he said a washing machine. That would probably be about right, right? That's this whole thing. So they're combining molecules of element 116 with molecules of atom antimatter, and it takes only a few molecules, and maybe even only one of each, to create an explosion, you know, where you could blow up half the galaxy. I'm not kidding. That's how powerful this is. And yet, it's contained in a device that's the size of your microwave oven, and it never gets out of there. So, by blowing those things up, they create an enormous amount of energy, and that energy is turned to electricity, and that powers the spacecraft. And the spacecraft supposedly is actually powered by electricity. Electromagnetic, and there's actually a term for it. I can't remember. It's called electromagnetic something. But anyway, that's supposedly how this works. So yeah. So why did I bring that up? Because I'm talking about Bob Lazar. So he said this is why I was trying to bring this up. So. That he said that that's the way these things worked, and they had nine of them in various stages of completion, right? Okay, so there's two theories here. One is what I just said, the fact that these things floating around are the Navy spacecraft, the Nimitz and all this sort of shit, that they're ours, and nobody wants to say that. And people say, well, we never use our own technology. We never experiment or fly it by our own troops. Well, yeah, that's the exact reason you do it. It's you normally want to do it. That's the very reason. But then the other theory, and there's quite a lot of credence to this. So I don't, you know, I'm just a guy sitting here on the inner tube speculating. So don't necessarily listen to me. The other theory is that they've had these things for years. Like years, like going back to the 1940s and 1950s, and haven't been able to figure them out to save their life. That's the other theory. And even when it comes to the ETs, there's two theories about that, too. There's a theory that the Pentagon knows where they're from and maybe is even in communication with them. There's another theory that we don't have a clue and they don't want to get out because they don't want to tell anybody they don't know. Because, you know, that's great. Our military doesn't know shit. You know, that's you don't want to hear that. The populace doesn't want to hear that from their military. You know, they don't. And yeah, it's really true. That's a legitimate thing. I don't think the populace, they would look pretty like the kind of like small penis, you know, if they came out and said, we don't know what's going on. We know they're here. We don't know what's going on. We don't know where they're from, blah, 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 blah. You know, so that there's, unfortunately, there's two ways of looking at all, virtually every argument involved in this whole scenario. Now, one thing that's been brought up, and I can't remember who brought this up. I didn't. It's not my idea, about the fact that people are talking about these different scenarios regarding these spacecraft, pretty much almost, then it's almost a foregone conclusion that the spacecrafts themselves exist. And that's kind of true. The logic would dictate that if you're talking about an either-or scenario, well, the thing that causes the either-or scenario must be real, you know? And, yeah, that to me is more evidence that these crashed spacecraft are actually real. And like I said, there's been government documents going back ages about, there's hundreds of them that talk about all sorts of UFOs. I've said this in the past. There's only one document I know of that actually talks about aliens, and that's at the FBI vault. You can actually go look at it, and the FBI has always said, "Oh, just a misunderstanding. No, nothing to see here. Move along." Oh, bullshit! you got guys in the field sending memos back to the home office saying, "We got three dead alien bodies. What do you want us to do with them?" Well, I don't think that's, there's not a lot of ways to misinterpret that. You know, it's like shit. You know, but the things about the UFOs themselves, they've been fooling around forever. There's another thing, too, regarding what Nick Pope was talking about here. And that is, some of our biggest evidence for this has come from Canada, because our military interfaces with the military of Canada, but Canadians are not bound by our security oaths. So a lot of the stuff that we've learned about this have come from Canadians who have blown the whistle. And because they've all told the same story, hell, Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister of Canada, he said he knew for a fact that the UFOs are real. He said, I mean, this is like, he's the highest ranking government official in the world ever come out and say this. He didn't say he believed in it. He said he knew for a fact they were real from talking to the Americans. He said he knew that. He died, like, I think 4 years ago, something like that. I can't remember. You have to look on the Wikipedia. But, yeah, so this stuff's been floating around for a long time. Then there's another story that's come out recently, too. This was also in the Daily Star, about the fact of what's called Welsh's Roswell. Or the UK's Roswell. The headline is Mystery of UK's Roswell blown wide open. UFO expert reckons aliens to blame. All right, the story. This is from a crash that happened on a farm in Wales in 1983. Or it wasn't really a crash. So what happened? And apparently there's a lot of people who actually saw the actual event. Fucking UFOs flying around. And it hits a bunch of trees on this guy's farm. Okay, so it hits the trees, but it flies away. And apparently there were a lot of people that saw this. I don't know how many, but they said there were numerous witnesses. All right, so this is 1983. So the farmer goes out there and he finds chunks of metal on the ground in 1983. He sends the metal off to some lab, and I don't quite understand how this happened, but it turns out they didn't get any results back until like 1997 or something like that. But it turns out that this metal, it was made up of two things, and I don't even know if I can pronounce the name of this right. One is an element called nanthanum, and the other was aluminum foil. Not foil, aluminum foam. That's foam. A foam material created out of aluminum metal. Now, apparently in 1983, that did not exist. We have it now. We now know how to make aluminum foam. But it did not exist in 1983. And lanthanum is an element on Earth, but it's so rare, you couldn't find enough to build a spacecraft out of it. That's the thing. So they got this. This just came out in the news too, and I don't know why this took so long, but it did, you know. This is crazy stuff, man. It's like, You know, there's a corollary story to this, and this happened I think about 10 years ago, and I can't even remember the name of the city. It's a city in Michigan on Lake Michigan. Guy's at his house, and apparently this was during the day, and there's a UFO in his backyard. I don't know if it's landed or it's hovering, but it's there. So this is really a hilarious story. This guy grabs his shotgun and shoots at it. And so it flies off, but a big chunk of it falls off. Apparently, it was not a small chunk. A large chunk of the spacecraft fell off because he shot at it. So he's got at least part of a UFO there, and he contacts MUFON or something like that, and they send it off to a. They send the metal off to a metallurgical lab, and they find out, well, we don't even know what this is. Whatever this is, it isn't made on Earth. That's what they found out. So it's like, I just kind of find that kind of funny. You know, you just shoot it, lost a piece. So I suppose, you know, that's enough proof to say you shot at a UFO. If no one can figure out what the piece is made out of, yeah, you probably have a piece of a UFO there. That's probably true. And finally, I got to bring this up because this has been being talked about quite a lot. There's the possibility right now that there's going to be a huge solar storm on the sun, which of course that's where a solar storm would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would be, you know, excuse me, the solar flares. You know, that'd be a huge storm. And scientists are saying, and we've known this for a long time, that this could knock out all communication on Earth for maybe even weeks. The last time this happened, that there was a storm as big as the one they're predicting, was in the early part of the 19th century, when of course there was no electronics. But that was the last one that was recorded that was this large.
Cooper joined.
So if you're gonna if you're gonna have a storm this big, man, I mean, you're this is peril. I mean, you think the internet when the internet when your Wi-Fi drops out for 5 minutes, you're panicking? Yeah, give it a month, you know, and then everybody, you know, and this is we've known about these things for some time about the fa about trying to defend against this, and of course, this is a natural phenomena. So we have a caller, believe it or not. I'm going to put this guy on. It's Cooper. Hey, Cooper. Hi.
Hello, Jimmy.
How you doing?
Good, Jimmy. How are you?
Good. I've been talking about the UFOs. I know you've been listening.
Oh my gosh, that's interesting because I was calling you about them tonight. Would
Yeah.
you like to know what I can tell you?
Yeah.
So I've worked in a number of secret labs, and I have dual citizenship in the U.S. and Switzerland. And so I heard a little snippet of what you were talking about, and you were talking about how the propulsion system runs on Mosconium and antimatter,
Correct.
right?
That's right.
Okay, that's not quite right. It's Mosconium, antimatter, and cramp bark.
And when what?
Cramp bark.
Crap bark?
No, cramp. CrampBark. Cramp bark.
Cramp. I don't even know what that is.
It's a substance that you get on Earth. It was referenced on the Seinfeld show.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
I thought you were
And
going to say Twinkies.
so there's quite a bit of cramp bark, and the Mosconium, you know, anybody can get the Mosconium, but you know,
Oh, yeah, that's simple, right?
but the next thing is, do you know, are you aware, have you read the brief on how he got the antimatter?
No.
He would go over to the he would go over to Switzerland where they have the
The CERN collider?
the big collider.
Yeah.
He would go over and he would wait once a month when they had their open house.
Okay.
Okay,
Yeah.
he'd go in and when there was the open house, he would drift away from the crowds. He'd go in and he always carried a little bag and he'd get some of the antimatter.
Yeah.
So that's how he got that, because you know you can't produce antimatter at home.
No, but he put it in a bag, huh? That would be like a baggie.
But you didn't explain how this guy got the antimatter.
No, and, that's right. Anyway, I don't know how he did.
That's how he got it.
Oh, hold it. I do have to clarify something though. This wasn't how Lazar did this. This is how he said they did this. So, you know, he didn't. He has no idea how they got the antimatter. He doesn't know.
No. He was actually experimenting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And, so I just wanted to point out it was. It's not just Musconium and antimatter. It's the Musconium, antimatter, and cramp bark. And then the question is, how do you get the antimatter? Well, he went over to the open houses.
Yeah.
In the CERN. So I just wanted to share that with your audience.
You're very knowledgeable.
Okay.
And then
I wanted to pass along a host note, if I could.
Yeah, sure.
Would you like to know what my friends and I consider the most exciting part of your shows?
What?
It's when you yawn. That's riveting. That's what sets you apart from most of the other shows.
Yeah, it is. I know that. I know the yawning. It's very unique. I know that. Right.
You know that guy, that hack on NBC that does the Tonight Show? I can't think of the guy's name.
Jimmy Fallon?
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Fallon. You know, uh-huh. Give me a break. You don't see him yawning.
No, you don't.
He doesn't have the courage. You've got the courage to do that. And this is what's going to take you all the way to the top. And I think you can cut back to one show a month. That's my recommendation.
Okay.
If you were to introduce advertising, if I can just give you a suggestion now.
Yeah.
If you introduce advertising, you could have segments on your show. And you could have one segment where it's just yawning.
Yeah, I could. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you could focus on that. So I just wanted to pass that along.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll just, you brought this up, so I'm just going to mention this right now. We're probably going to be running ads after the first of the year. So at least one anyway. So
I'd like to buy some space. Can you tell me how much?
Yeah. I tell you what, you email me and I'll tell you back. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, keep it up. Your show's dynamite.
Yeah, my show's antimatter, in other words.
And don't forget about the cramp bark, okay?
No, I won't. What about the Twinkies? How does that get in there?
Well, that's more of a matter of taste.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. But I would like to see you demo some Twinkie tastings on your show some night.
You know, Cooper, that's not a bad idea. I'm going to do that.
You cut them open, you point out the cream and the cake.
Yeah.
And and let the crowd gauge your reaction.
I will. Honest to God, that sounds like a good idea to me. You know,
I'd pay to watch that.
I've actually thought of doing some cooking segments here. I know that's weird, but I thought it might be kind of funny. But I don't know.
Well, you've got magic in a bottle.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Right. Have a nice night.
Hey, thanks. You too. Nice talking to you. See ya. That's Cooper. Apparently he's from another planet. He's told me previously, so he's called a few times. So, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I tell you what, that's our show for tonight because that's all I got. No, actually, I got a lot more, but that's all. I thought I would just do the UFO stuff tonight, and we can deal with politics shit tomorrow. Jennifer Oliver Kahn is going to be our guest. She writes for RedState.com. Very, very good writer. Writes about a lot of conservative stuff, and on Wednesday we have our debate night panel, and they're always good for it's very, very entertaining, and I have to say we've gotten a lot of positive comments about that, and those shows, the last three have been relatively well watched, so I'm glad to have those guys back too. Anyway, so thanks for Cooper to calling. I'll just wrap this up here. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with the UFOs, and God knows if anybody can ever figure it out. I mean, I'm going to get back to my original thing. The only thing I know for certain is we have crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. Where they're from, who's crashing them, you know, how much we know, how much we can figure out, I have no idea. It's all speculation from that point. And, yeah, and people are saying different things, so you never know. So, and yeah, I'll try not to yawn. Good night. Esperanza, good night, Uncle Donnie, and good night to you, wherever you are. Have a nice evening. I'll see you tomorrow.